This is Free City Radio. I'm your host, Stefan Christoff. Thank you so much for joining us. It is Tuesday, the 27th of July, and this is the 52nd edition of this podcast. I hope you're all doing well, and thank you so much for listening and tuning into this podcast. I produce a new episode every Tuesday. It's always a pleasure to share different voices and music with you. On the program today, we'll be hearing from Marisa Berry Mendez, who is a campaigner with Amnesty International in Canada and Quebec. Marisa has been involved in working with Amnesty to support the movement for regularization. So the movement to support a very important demand that many community organizations and activists are pushing for, which is the movement for status for all. That is a movement to push the Canadian government to regularize all people living with precarious status. There are countless thousands across Canada. It is hard to identify a specific number, specifically because of people's undocumented status. It means it's difficult to sort of get a very full picture, but we do know for sure that there are tens of thousands of people without status. The context of the pandemic has really made clear the ways that people with precarious status have been serving on the front lines. In many cases, people who are working in essential jobs, but also the collective danger that the active policy decisions that both the Quebec and Canadian governments make to allow for people to have precarious status, the danger that that presents for, a context like the pandemic, where people without status are living in fear, of course, because of threats of detention or deportation on the part of the government. So given that fear, people are, of course, afraid to try to access medical services from the very same state infrastructure, the very same government that could, through another arm, deport them or detain them due to precarious status. Despite this, many people have been working, in distribution warehouses, even within the medical system. One of those cases is Mahamadou Konaté, who is an asylum seeker from Côte d'Ivoire in West Africa. And despite his precarious status as an asylum seeker whose case was not acknowledged by the Canadian government and who is now facing deportation, he served as a janitor within multiple CHSLDs in Quebec. That's the system of elderly care homes in Quebec. And now he's facing deportation from Canada. So I spoke with Marisa from Amnesty International about Mamadou's case, but more generally about why Amnesty International, a major human rights organization, both in Quebec, Canada, but of course internationally, has taken for the first time a position on the issue of supporting the Status for All movement, which, of course, many grassroots initiatives and organizations have supported for a long time, like the Immigrant Workers Center, like the Migrant Rights Network, like Solidarity Across Borders, like many initiatives of community-led struggles of people who are fighting for regularization. So that's the podcast this week, and here's my conversation with Marisa from Amnesty International. I'm joined by Marisa Berry Mendez, who is a longtime advocate for migrant justice and human rights in general.
Marisa has worked with many organizations over the years, but recently has been working with the Canadian Francophone section of Amnesty International. I was with Marisa last week because there was a community press conference that took place to highlight a particular case of an asylum seeker, Mahamadou Konate, who is from Côte d'Ivoire and worked as a janitor in the CHSLD system of elderly care homes in Quebec during the pandemic and is facing deportation. So I wanted to talk with Marisa about this case, but trying to understand that story within a broader context. So thank you so much, Marisa, for taking the time today to speak here.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Great. Well, I guess, first of all, we do hear these stories sometimes in the press, and often they do catch attention of, you know, an asylum seeker who is facing deportation. And particularly in Quebec today, there's quite a lot of discussion around asylum seekers who served in the context of the pandemic. Amnesty International and many other organizations have articulated in different ways the importance of status as a human rights issue, which is a really, I think, important framing. So I'm just wondering maybe if we could start there, just to sort of understand that framing and why it's important to think about immigration status or non-precarity as a human rights issue, not in the framework of, like, you know, the charity model of like, oh, these people deserve status. It's actually that status is a right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the position of Amnesty, or at least sort of the policy guidelines that came out, particularly in light of the pandemic and all the issues that were really brought to the fore that were pre-existing, but that were exacerbated around access to fundamental human rights, including access to healthcare, the right to healthcare, the right to life, because we've seen that a lot of people are put particularly at risk in the context of the pandemic, and other basic rights, such as labor rights, is that, you know, migrants who have precarious status or no status often don't have access to those rights, and regularization of status can be a very good solution to that problem. So, you know, the human rights issues are sort of those access to basic human rights, but the way that you know, violation of those rights is facilitated in cases where people don't have full status. And so Amnesty's position is actually around regularization more broadly. So not necessarily access to permanent status. It could also be some of the regularization programs that have taken place in Europe, for example, where people are provided with papers, they can access government services and things like that, but it's not necessarily a pathway to permanent residence or citizenship. However, here at Amnesty Canada Francophone, we are asking for permanent residence in these cases. But in any case, that's sort of the broad issue, is that access to basic human rights is very much limited and impeded by precarious status. And so regularization can be a solution to that.
Well, I'm wondering if you could share a bit about the ways that the pandemic has illustrated why this is a human rights issue. Just to sort of, because, you know, it's interesting. I mean, like, full disclosure, we've known each other a long time. We've traveled in similar journeys in terms of, like, different struggles in support of human rights and migrant rights particularly. But I don't know if you feel this, but I felt like in the context of the pandemic, there has been really a shift in terms of, like, the articulation of the rights of essential workers, the articulation of this idea that there shouldn't be unequal status in society, and the pandemic has really sort of brought forward some of these arguments. Could you talk a bit about your reflections on the importance of this conversation, but also the importance of not losing track of, you know, as the vaccine rollout takes place, of not losing track of the ways the pandemic showed the importance of this issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting question because, you know, all of these issues are pre-existing, mm-hmm. and I think have become more deeply entrenched maybe in the last 20 or 30 years as precarious status, or, you know, in the Canadian context at least, as precarious status as the temporary foreign worker programs, mm-hmm. You know, have sort of mushroomed and our immigration system has seemed to become more stratified. Mm-hmm. The issues around access to healthcare, around access yeah. to labor rights, et cetera, are pre-existing.
Yeah.
It was quite amazing to see how, you know, yeah. with the pandemic and this sudden recognition and this sudden sort of public discourse around the essential nature of the work that certain people are doing, in particular and overwhelmingly immigrant and migrant people, suddenly these issues were brought to the fore, and yeah. there was like an awareness raising about you know, especially in Quebec, temp agencies, well, actually mm-hmm. everywhere in Canada, but all these sort of exploitative mechanisms, including some of our immigration programs, particularly temporary foreign worker yeah. programs, and so it really became an opportunity for, I mean, you know, an organization like Amnesty to say, okay, now is a good moment for us to try and amplify the message that community and grassroots organizations have been conveying mm-hmm. for years and years. Mm-hmm. This is a good moment because there's sort of like a resonance, and there's really like a rhetorical tool in this idea of, yeah. of the essential work. And so, yeah. So I guess that's what I would say about this moment. Mm-hmm. If, you know, to talk about like that stratification, and, the human rights issues that are underlying, I mean, you know, I think there's a real convergence of a lot of different issues. I keep mentioning the temporary foreign worker program, which is a program that in some different iterations has existed, you know, like the seasonal agricultural workers program sure. has existed more than 50 years. The yeah. caregiver program in different forms also has existed for many decades. And then the other sort of low skilled, ultimately essential programs have really taken off in the last 20
yeah.
years
yeah.
In which, you know, that have really just created these two streams or more, but really, you know, we have this immigration program that we tout in confluence with our multiculturalism policy and approach. And, you know, these are permanent residents, and Canada has succeeded in having a really positive rhetoric around our permanent immigration programs. And then of course, there's also, you know, humanitarian protection programs around refugees, which, you know, do experience backlash, but there is a sort of general acceptance of some of those streams. And then on the other side, you have the yeah. temporary foreign worker programs yeah. where people are, you know, it's like the most essential jobs
yeah.
and people absolutely don't have access to status yeah. in yes. general, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you have, of course, the refugee claims program, which, you know, in many ways is quite positive mm-hmm. and has been a mechanism for granting protection to, you know, tens of thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people over the years, but which also has a lot of problems. And, you know, Mamadou's case is really emblematic of that. These sort of articles around inadmissibility and the ways that people in certain situations can fall through the cracks and not even be considered by such a system. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you have the situation of people without status who may have fallen out of status for a variety of different reasons, including, you know, they had their claim for protection refused, for
yeah.
example.
Yeah.
And then, you know, one of the interesting things you were saying is speaking to sort of the, I guess, dualism or like the, what's the word I'm looking for? Contradictions in government discourse. If you listen to our federal government, you would think that there's nobody without status in this country.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
recently
that's the rhetoric.
Yeah. It's just even in the month of April when they announced a regularization program for about 90,000 people, which, you know, obviously will welcome any steps in those directions, sure, even if it's sort of limited. The interesting thing about that program was the 30,000 spots for essential workers and the fact that the list of professions included professions that are kind of never before considered, including agricultural workers, for example, people in working in, I think, meat processing and fish processing plants, like so security guards were included. That was sort of felt sort of groundbreaking. But then there are all these other structural barriers to those folks having access.
Sure.
And the other thing was that you had to have a temporary work permit. So all the people in those jobs who don't have status are ineligible. So they don't they're just completely invisibilized. Maybe I'll let you because
That's great. That's I think, you know, what you're illustrating in terms of understanding the reality of the persisting fact that there are so many people doing essential work that have no status, and also many people that maybe can't be maybe named within these sort of policy discussions, who simply are just surviving without papers at all. And there's been so much important work to sort of try to lift up those voices and the reality that so many people do not have status. And in the context of the pandemic, so many people who are doing essential work had no status. So in that, and thank you for all the analysis around like the Live-In Caregiver Program or agricultural workers, because I mean, this is not a new phenomenon, right? Like going back even to the 70s, you know, there was caregiver programs that did in many ways delineate status and create sort of structural barriers for some people to access status, even if they're working in Canada. So it's not a new situation, which I think is important to underline. So why was it important for you, Marisa, to, you know, we were together in that community press conference last week in front of Justin Trudeau's riding office in Montreal. Why was it important for you? And I know it's not the first time you engaged in speaking about Mahamudu Konaté's case, but why was this case, given all that what you've shared, important for you to speak about?
Mm-hmm. You know, Mahamudu's case is so emblematic of sort of a variety of different systemic issues. You know, you have the piece around inadmissibility, where he isn't able to submit a claim for protection under our refugee determination system because of circumstances in his country of origin. And his affiliation or presumed affiliation to certain groups. So, you know, that being one, the fact that he was working on the front lines in the health system during the pandemic, you know, I don't think that we should, there's so much, I don't think we should value ascribing differential value to different jobs is a slippery slope. And yet the symbolism of being on the front lines, working with COVID patients, being in the rooms of COVID patients without appropriate protective equipment, especially at the beginning there.
Yes, of course.
You know, and then being excluded from that incredibly restrictive program that was introduced last December, despite rhetoric, particularly from the Quebec government, around wanting to recognize the ange gardien and so on and so forth. So, you know, this you know, let's applaud everybody in the health system.
Yeah.
This sort of rhetorical upholding and you know, making into heroes of these workers, and then actually just turning around and slapping them in the face by excluding them from these programs that get introduced is hugely problematic. The fact that because he was unable to actually be a refugee claimant because of inadmissibility, he had no access to healthcare, so that when he did get COVID, because of his frontline job, he couldn't get the healthcare he needed and, you know, was relying on folks from the migrant justice community who were very solidaire, you know, who offered a lot of solidarity and support, but he had no healthcare in a country that says that it has universal healthcare.
Which illustrates
there's just, there's so many pieces that come together that really illustrate a lot of the different problems. And I believe that Mamadou was also recruited by a temp agency to work at the CHSLD. And we know that temp agencies really take a big cut. And so people are earning less than they should be earning. And that it's a real problem in terms of predatory labor practices. Yes. So there's just like a convergence of so many different things in his case. And also, you know, very understandably, not a lot of people in his situation are willing to be public.
Yes.
And so, you know, and as I say, very understandably, but Mamadou's sort of courage and, you know, outspokenness on his own situation is inspiring and also gives us an opportunity to convene around him and his case, and then also the systemic issues that his case brings to the fore.
Marisa Berry-Mendez, thank you so much for taking the time to speak today.
My pleasure.
Thanks.
That was a conversation with Marisa Berry-Mendez from Amnesty International here on Free City Radio. Thank you so much to Marisa for joining the show today and sharing your perspectives on the importance of the Status for All movement and why Amnesty International has taken a position in support of the demands for regularization of all people with precarious status within the context of seeing that as a human rights issue. There's many organizations who are active on this front and in support of people with precarious status, including the Immigrant Workers Center in Montreal, the Migrant Rights Network, and Solidarity Across Borders, many others. So I'd encourage you to look up those organizations. And this has been the 52nd edition of Free City Radio. I'm your host, Stéphane Christophe in Montreal. If you like this podcast, please encourage a friend to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts. You can find me on Twitter at Spirodon, S-P-I-R-O-D-O-N. And you can email me anytime, stefan.christoff@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. And to go out for this week, I'm going to go to a great piece of music by Tracy Chapman. And I'll see you next Tuesday. Take care.
If you knew that you would die today, you saw the face of God and love, would you change? Would you change? If you knew that love can't break your heart, when you're down so low you cannot fall, would you change? Would you change? How bad, how good does it need to get? How many losses, how much regret? What chain reaction, what cause and effect? Makes you turn around, makes you try to explain, makes you forgive and forget, makes you change. 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 How bad, how good does it need to get? How many losses, how much regret? What chain reaction would cause an effect?
So my name is Bea, and I am being interviewed for a voice and movement practice that I've been facilitating for the past 5.5 years, I guess, at this point. And I work between sound and dance. I used to play in a band, singing and making music, and now I'm in kind of hibernation mode from that. I created Womcore when I was like 22 and was really stepping into a lot of frustration about things that I felt were expected of me, like having a baby or being in a particular kind of sexual romantic relationship that really didn't resonate. And so for me, I was like, I want my womb to be like a creative space.